This is the only hour that ever was or ever will be. This is the most important hour in your entire life. For during this hour, you will decide your future and thus our collective futures. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
Last night, ladies and gentlemen, and as I was telling you about the 375 H&H Magnum rifle that we are going to be talking about on Monday, I think I failed to mention that it must have a Mauser action. The Mauser action is the only one strong enough to withstand the modifications that we're going to do to the round that you're going to be firing through this weapon. So I wanted to straighten that out right off the bat tonight. It's got to have a Mauser action. 375 H&H Magnum with a Mauser action should have the longest best barrel that you can purchase, and stay tuned for Monday night, and we'll tell you exactly what to do with it. Don't go away.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? Oh, where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I've crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard, it's hard. Rain's gonna fall. What did you hear, my blue-eyed son? What did you hear, my darling young one? Heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. Heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. Heard 100 drummers whose hands were blazing.
Tonight's episode of The Hour of the Time is produced and directed by Pooh, who's here in the studio with us, overseeing everything. And, of course, singing right along with the lyrics. She's my brown-eyed girl. Yes, sir. Tonight, 83rd Congress, second session. United States Senate, document number 87. 83rd Congress, second session. United States Senate Document Number 87, a review of the United Nations Charter, a collection of documents, Subcommittee of the United Nations Charter, pursuant to Senate Resolution 126, 83rd Congress, First Session, presented by Mr. Wiley, January 7, 1954, ordered to be printed with illustrations, United States Government Printing Office, Washington, 1954. I'll be reading selected excerpts. And we're going to start off here with Section 36, Act prescribing the position of the United States flag to the United States. Let me start that over again, folks. Act prescribing the position of the United Nations flag to the United States flag, July 9, 1953. An act to prohibit the display of flags of international organizations or other nations in equal or superior prominence or honor to the flag of the United States, and catch this, folks, except under specified circumstances and for other purposes. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled that Section 3C of the Joint Resolution, entitled Joint Resolution to Codify and Emphasize Existing Rules and Customs Pertaining to the Display and Use of the Flag of the United States of America, approved June 22, 1942, as amended 36 United States Code Section 175C, is amended by adding at the end thereof the following new sentence, quote, no person shall display the flag of the United Nations or any other national or international flag equal, above, or in a position of superior prominence or honor to, or in place of, the flag of the United States at any place within the United States or any territory or possession thereof, provided that nothing in this section shall make unlawful the continuance of the practice heretofore followed of displaying the flag of the United Nations in a position of superior prominence or honor and other national flags in positions of equal prominence or honor with that of the flag of the United States at the headquarters of the United Nations, approved July 9, 1953. Treaties and domestic law. View of the four sponsoring... I want to make a point on that, folks, that the United Nations flag is flown at the United Nations headquarters above the flag of the United States, and it is United States soil. Treaties and domestic law. View of the four sponsoring governments. Abstract of statement by Honorable John Foster Dulles, United States Delegation on Domestic Jurisdiction, Clause of the Charter, San Francisco Conference, 1945. In his exposition of the intent of Article 8, Mr. Dulles emphasized that the four-power amendment dealt with domestic jurisdiction as a basic principle, and not, has been the case, in the original Dumbarton Oaks proposals and in Article 15 of the Covenant of the League of Nations, as a technical and legalistic formula designed to deal with the settlement of disputes by the Security Council. This change in concept had been caused, he explained, by the change in the character of the organization as planned in the discussions at San Francisco. The scope of the organization was now broadened to include functions which would enable the organization to eradicate the underlying causes of war, as well as to deal with crises leading to war. Under the Social and Economic Council, the organization would deal with economic and social problems. This broadening of the scope of the organization constituted a great advance, but it also engendered special problems. For instance, the question had been raised as to what would be the basic relation of the organization to member states. Would the organization deal with the governments of the member states, or would the organization penetrate directly into the domestic life and social economy of the member states? As provided in the amendment of the sponsoring governments, Mr. Dulles pointed out that this principle would require the organization to deal with the governments. Under the Economic and Social Council, the organization had a mandate to raise the standards of living and foster employment, etc. But no one in the 10-member council would go behind the governments in order to impose its desires. The amendment recognized the distinct value of the individual social life of each state. In reply to the contention that domestic jurisdiction should be determined in accordance with international law, Mr. Dulles again pointed out that international law was subject to constant change and therefore escaped definition. It would, in any case, be difficult to define whether or not a given situation came within the domestic jurisdiction of a state. Interesting. In summary, Mr. Dulles stressed the virtues of the principle, its breadth, and its simplicity. The organization and none of its branches or organs should intervene in what was essentially the domestic life of the member states. Moreover, this principle was subject to evolution. In other words, what he just said didn't mean anything. The United States had had long experience in dealing with a parallel problem. In effect, the relationship between the 48 states and the federal government. Today, the federal government of the United States exercised an authority undreamed of when the Constitution was formed, and the people of the United States were grateful for the simple conceptions contained in their Constitution. And we still are, folks. We'd like to have it back. In like manner, Mr. Dulles foresaw that if the Charter contained simple and broad principles, future generations would be thankful to the men at San Francisco who had drafted it. Thank you very much, Mr. Alger Hiss, you commie devil, you rat, you dirty, dirty rat, and all the rest of you. Boy, all but one of those who had a hand in drafting the United Nations Charter, ladies and gentlemen, were eventually named as communists, and many of them were imprisoned. The chairman moved a vote of thanks to Mr. Dulles for his masterly exposition of the problem of domestic jurisdiction, and Mr. Evatt rose to second the motion. Now we go to Section 69, Se Fuji'i and the State of California. Opinion of the District Court of Appeals, 2nd District, Division 2, California, April 24, 1950. In the period of 30 years since the Alien Land Law was adopted, we have revised our opinions concerning the rights of other peoples. Out of the travail of World War II came the concept of respect for human rights and for fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as to race, sex, language, or religion, as expressed in the Charter of the United Nations, 59 Statutes 1035 FF, U.S. Code, Congressional Service, 79th Congress, 1945, page 964. The government of the United States has traditionally been the leader in espousing the rights of man and has championed the cause of the smaller and less privileged nations. The War of 1898 was fought in support of an oppressed country. The efforts of our government in this regard reached fruition in the Convention of Representatives of the Nations of the Earth, at which the Charter of the United Nations was adopted. It was promptly ratified by the Senate of the United States, thereby proclaiming allegiance to its principles and providing precedent and example for other countries. The United States has consistently regarded its treaties with other nations as inviolate. The Charter has become, quote, the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding, unquote. Now, for all you sheeple out there who don't understand what I just read, I'm going to read it again. And all you bleeding liberals out there who claim allegiance to the Constitution but support this treason, you better listen very closely. You cannot have two masters. The Charter has become, quote, the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding, unquote. United States Constitution, Article 6, Section 2, the position of this country in the family of nations, forbids trafficking in notious generalities, but demands that every state in the Union accept and act upon the Charter according to its plain language and its unmistakable purpose and intent. There you have it, folks. An admission by the United States Senate that the United Nations Charter is the supreme law of the land. Now, those of you who have been so obnoxious as to call me a liar, I expect to have a written apology within 5 days. Thank you very much. Since the Charter is now the supreme law of the land, it becomes necessary to examine its provisions and guarantees and to interpret it in the light in which it was adopted by the participating nations. The organization determined in the preamble, quote, to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights and the dignity and worth of the human person, to promote social progress and better standards of life and larger freedom. There is no larger freedom, ladies and gentlemen, than what we have possessed in this country. What they are talking about is democratic socialism. In other words, what the Nazis had in Germany in World War II. Social progress and better standards of life in larger freedom. Once you understand the socialist code words, it begins to make better sense to you. Remember, socialism and socialists suck. Can't put it any better than that. They're all out there somewhere sucking right this moment. Among the purposes and principles found in Article 1 of Chapter 1 are, quote, to develop friendly relations among nations based on respect for the principle of equal rights, to achieve international cooperation in promoting and encouraging respect for human rights and for fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as to race, sex, language, or religion, unquote. Now notice what they say, folks. Our forefathers said all men are created equal. Created equal. That means when they're born, they have the same opportunities as anyone else. What they do with their life, however, is quite a different story. In other words, when all of a generation reach the age of 20 years old, they are not equal. Some have demonstrated that they are superior, some remain average, and some become a burden upon everyone else and are, without a doubt, inferior. But socialists say this. Socialists, folks, say this. Listen carefully. To develop friendly relations among nations based on respect for the principle of equal rights. Which means everyone is equal all the time. It just ain't so, ladies and gentlemen. Never has been and never will be. No one will ever have any respect for the person who makes welfare a career, who has children just for the sake of more money in their welfare check. No one will ever have any respect for a man, who sits on the street corner claiming that there are no jobs when you can open any newspaper and find pages and pages of jobs available for those who would have them. For people who, when they need work, will not accept the work that may be available until they can find better work because, quote, it's beneath my dignity, unquote. If you're that kind of person, you have no dignity. You have no honor, no ethics. In Article 2, it is affirmed that the organization and its members, quote, shall fulfill in good faith the obligations assumed by them in accordance with the present charter, unquote. It is agreed in Chapter 9, Article 55, that the United Nations shall promote universal respect for and observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as to race, sex, language, or religion. By Article 56, it is declared that all members pledge themselves to take joint and separate action in cooperation with the organization for the achievement of the purposes set forth in Article 55. In the address of the President of the United States to the Senate on July 2, 1945, urging the prompt ratification of the Charter by that body, he said, quote, it seeks to promote worldwide progress and better standards of living. It seeks to achieve universal respect for and observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms for all men and women without distinction as to race, language, or religion. It seeks to remove the economic and social causes of international conflict and unrest. It is the product of many hands and many influences. It comes from the reality of experience in a world where one generation has failed twice to keep the peace. The lessons of that experience have been written into the document, unquote. United States Code, Congressional Service, Supra, pages 961 through 962. They don't tell you that they're the ones who caused those wars in order to bring this about. And that is well documented also. On December 10, 1948, the General Assembly of the United Nations passed and proclaimed and called upon all member countries to publicize, disseminate, and expound in schools and elsewhere a, quote, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, unquote. And you all thought it was something new, didn't you? None of this is new, folks. None of it. Affirming, among other things, that, quote, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They should act toward one another in a spirit of brotherhood. I agree with that, folks, as long as it stops with being born free and equal in dignity and rights. Many people give up their freedom voluntarily, and no one beyond that point is equal in the truest sense with anyone else. Your station in life is determined by your production, your contributions to society, your ethics, and your morals. Not just because you exist. Not just because you occupy space and suck in air and blow out air. That means only that you are here and nothing else. Act 1, Article 1, should be Act 1, Article 1, everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. I agree with that. Article 2, everyone has the right to own property alone as well as in association with others. I also agree with that. In fact, the ownership of property is an absolute requirement of a free people. You will find, though, that in the resolutions passed and pending, and in the many charters that the United Nations has promulgated, the right to own property is questionable at best in this totalitarian socialist order. And you can see that they are attempting huge land grabs with the excuse of environmental action. Recently, the United States Congress passed a law, and Clinton signed that law, stating that environmental inspectors have access to all personal property to inspect to see if you're endangering the green polka-dotted earthworm or some other such nonsense. So if they come to your door, you're forbidden by law to bar them entry. However, we all know it's unconstitutional, but as I've just demonstrated to you, the Constitution is not in force. The Constitution has been superseded by the United Nations Charter, by the Senate's own admission in this document. Article 17. This declaration implements and emphasizes the purpose and aims of the United Nations and its charter. Democracy provides a way of life that is helpful. However, its promises of human betterment are but vain expressions of hope unless ideals of justice and equity are put into practice among governments, and as well between government and citizen, and are held to be paramount. Now, what's wrong with this statement, folks, is we do not and have never lived in a democracy. This is a republic, and if you do not know the difference, you'd better find out now. All this talk of democracy is but a code word for the creeping, all-encompassing socialism that will engulf us, swallow us whole, digest us, and secrete us as waste material in the progress of the coming to power of the all-powerful state. People don't matter in socialist governments, only the state matters. And if you're a people, you better get concerned about that. Real quick. The integrity and vitality of the Charter and the confidence which it inspires would wane and eventually be brought to naught by failure to act according to its announced purposes. Its survival is contingent upon the degree of reverence shown for it by the contracting nations, their governmental subdivisions, and their citizens as well. This nation can be true to its pledge to the other signatories to the Charter only by cooperating in the purposes that are so plainly expressed in it and by removing every obstacle to the fulfillment of such purposes. A perusal of the Charter renders it manifest that restrictions contained in the Alien Land Law are in direct conflict with the plain terms of the Charter above quoted and with the purposes announced therein by its framers. It is incompatible with Article 17 of the Declaration of Human Rights, which proclaims the right of everyone to own property. We have shown that the expansion by the Congress of the classes of nationals eligible to citizenship has correspondingly shrunk the group ineligible under the provisions of the Alien Land Law to own or lease land in California, until the latter now consists in reality of a very small number of Japanese. The other Asiatics who still remain on the proscribed list are so few that they need not be considered. Clearly, such a discrimination against a people of one race is contrary both to the letter and to the spirit of the Charter, which as a treaty is paramount to every law of every state in conflict with it. Now, did you hear what that said, ladies and gentlemen? Any law in this country which is in conflict with the United Nations Charter is null and void. The Alien Land Law must therefore yield to the treaty as the superior authority. The restrictions of the statute based on eligibility to citizenship, but which ultimately and actually are referable to race or color, must be and are therefore declared untenable and unenforceable. Judgment reversed with directions to enter a decree in favor of plaintiff in accordance with the prayer of his complaint. Now, what they're saying there, folks, is if you're a nation trying to protect the interest of your citizens, and you have a law that forbids the ownership of land by citizens of foreign countries, they say that it is not really about citizenship, but about race or color. You see how they twist things? Now, if we were a sovereign nation, there would be nothing wrong with that law. But if we were, in fact, a vassal state of the United Nations, part of a larger order to which all citizens of the world belonged, then such a law could not exist. And in fact, doesn't. Simply because the ruling is that the United Nations Charter takes precedence over the Constitution of the United Nations, of the United States, and all laws of the United States government, and all laws of the several states. You see, ladies and gentlemen, they declared war against us long, long ago. They have been letting us believe that we have a Constitution and a Bill of Rights and that we are still the sovereign United States of America. It is a lie. We are, in fact, a subjugated people. We are, in fact, a peoples with an army of occupation which belongs to the United Nations, and you don't have to look for foreign troops to find it. It is called the United States Navy, the United States Army, the United States Air Force, the United States Coast Guard, and the United States Marines. And in the several states where you think you have National Guard belonging to the states, and where you think that the National Guard constitutes the militia, they are, in fact, an organization that can be federalized. And if they have accepted federal money for equipment, supplies, aircraft, arms, or ammunition, or uniforms, are already federalized, which makes them another military organization of the United Nations. Wake up, sheeple. And you'd better wake up really fast. You see, it's all been done long, long ago. Run, run, don't walk, run, don't walk to your nearest telephone. Across this nation, and it probably already is in your living room tonight. For as you've been listening to me read all these documents, there was always this nagging doubt in the back of your mind, and there was always this belief that, well, you know, he's reading from his documents, and I can go check it out in the library, but it just can't really be true. Well, it is true, ladies and gentlemen. The United States of America does not exist. The Constitution of the United States of America is not in force. There are no Bill of Rights. Now, for those of us who have been wondering, why is it that the Constitution has not been amended, but all across this country, they have stripped us of our rights, protected by the Constitution and by the first 10 amendments, stripped our rights away. In case you don't know it, you cannot say whatever you want to in this nation anymore. In fact, if you say certain things in this nation, you can be arrested, you can be taken out of this country and tried in a United Nations court, and if found guilty of saying anything that hurt the feelings of any one person who is a member of a minority, you can be sentenced to death. Oh yes, read the Genocide Treaty. Read the Genocide Convention adopted by the United Nations. You have no more right to privacy under the Fourth Article and Amendment to the Constitution. You have no right anymore to protection from the seizure of your property without just compensation. In fact, it happens every day across this country and has happened to many people today, this day as we speak. Posse comitatus no longer applies, as you witnessed in Waco, Texas. There are no rights protected by any constitution or by any bill of rights left in this nation. I can go right down every single right that you thought you had, you do not have. Not long ago, they passed a law stating that confessions obtained by beatings can no longer be thrown out of court, which means they can beat you until you say whatever they want you to say, and that confession will stand in court, cannot be thrown out. Don't believe it? Go look it up, sheeple. Everything I'm telling you on this program is the truth, but I do not want you to believe what I'm saying blindly. I want you to go check it. Listen to everyone, read everything, believe nothing. Now run, don't walk, to your nearest phone and call 1-800-289-2646. Never mind who it is, you'll find out when they answer. 1-800-289-2646. You need their services. You need to thank them for sponsoring this program. You need to buy a bag of everything that they've got, and you need to keep it where you can pick it up and run with it at the slightest notion. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. Don't wait another moment. Perusal of the Charter renders it manifest that restrictions contained in the Alien Land Law are in direct conflict with the plain terms of the Charter above quoted and with the purposes announced therein by its framers. Skipping down, clearly such a discrimination against a people of one race is contrary both to the letter and to the spirit of the Charter, which as a treaty is paramount to every law of every state in conflict with it. Lest you doubt, or lest you forgot where we left off, folks, it was with the admonition that the United Nations Charter is the supreme law of this land. The United Nations Charter, it is first contended that the land law has been invalidated and superseded by the provisions of the United Nations Charter pledging the member nations to promote the observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms without distinction as to race. The plaintiff relies on statements in the preamble and in the Articles 1, 55, and 56 of the Charter, 59 Statutes, 1035. It is not disputed that the Charter is a treaty, and our federal Constitution provides that treaties made under the authority of the United States are part of the supreme law of the land, and that the judges in every state are bound thereby. United States Constitution, Article 6. A treaty, however, does not automatically supersede local laws which are inconsistent with it unless the treaty provisions are self-executing. In the words of Chief Justice Marshall, a treaty is to be regarded in courts of justice as equivalent to an act of the legislature whenever it operates of itself, without the aid of any legislative provision. But when the terms of the stipulation import a contract, when either of the parties engages to perform a particular act, the treaty addresses itself to the political, not the judicial department, and the legislature must execute the contract before it becomes a rule for the court. Foster v. Nielsen, 1829, 2, Petition 253, 314, 7, L.Ed. 415. In determining whether a treaty is self-executing, courts look to the intent of the signatory parties as manifested by the language of the instrument, and if the instrument is uncertain, recourse may be had to the circumstances surrounding its execution. Now, this was the argument for the plaintiff in this suit, and I skip down a little further to pertinent paragraphs. Although the member nations have obligated themselves to cooperate with the international organization in promoting respect for and observance of human rights, it is plain that it was contemplated that future legislative action by the several nations would be required to accomplish the declared objectives, and there is nothing to indicate that these provisions were intended to become rules of law for the courts of this country upon the ratification of the Charter. The language used in Article 55 and 56 is not the type customarily employed in treaties which have been held to be self-executing and to create rights and duties in individuals. For example, the treaty involved in Clark versus Allen, 331 United States, 503, 507 to 508, 67 Supreme Court, 1431, 1434, 91 L. Ed., 1633, relating to the rights of a national of one country to inherit real property located in another country, specifically provided that such national should be allowed a term of 3 years in which to sell the property and withdraw the proceeds, free from any discriminatory taxation. See also Hollenstein v. Lynham, 100 United States, 483, 488 to 490, 25 L. Ed. 628, and Nielsen v. Johnson, 279 U.S. 47, 50, 49, Supreme Court, 223, 73 L. Ed. 607. The provision, treated as being self-executing, was equally definite. There, each of the signatory parties agreed that no hire or other duties, charges, or taxes of any kind shall be levied by one country on removal of property therefrom by citizens of the other country than are or shall be payable in each state upon the same when removed by a citizen or subject of such state respectively. In other instances, treaty provisions were enforced without implementing legislation where they prescribed in detail the rules governing rights and obligations of individuals, or specifically provided that citizens of one nation shall have the same rights while in the other country as are enjoyed by that country's own citizens. Bacardi Corporation v. Dominick, 311 United States, 150, 158 through 159, 61 Supreme Court, 219, 224, 85 L. Ed. 98. Asakura v. City of Seattle, 265 United States, 332, 340, 44 Supreme Court, 515, 516, 68 L. Ed., 1041. See Majorano v. Baltimore and Ohio Railroad Company, 213 United States, 268, 273 through 274, 29 Supreme Court, 424, 425 through 426, 53 L. Ed., 792. Chu Hong v. United States, 112, U.S. 536, 541 through 542, 5 Supreme Court, 255, 257, 28 L. Ed. 770. It is significant to note that when the framers of the Charter intended to make certain provisions effective without the aid of implementing legislation, they employed language which is clear and definite and manifests that intention. For example, Article 104 provides, "The organization shall enjoy in the territory of each of its members such legal capacity as may be necessary for the exercise of its functions and the fulfillment of its purposes." Article 105 provides, 1, "The organization shall enjoy in the territory of each of its members such privileges and immunities as are necessary for the fulfillment of its purposes." 2. Representatives of the members of the United Nations and officials of the organization shall similarly enjoy such privileges and immunities as are necessary for the independent exercise of their functions in connection with the organization. And it goes on, and it prevents a wonderful argument. A wonderful argument. And the result is that the judgment is reversed, ladies and gentlemen. However, the judgment has been and still is ignored by the executive and judicial branches of the United States government and by the states who receive monies from the federal government. Remember, the states are suborned simply because they accept benefits from the benefactor. Therefore, give up their sovereignty. Just as you give up your sovereignty when you accept benefits from the benefactor has the right under the law to call the tune to which you must dance. Whoa. And so, that is the end of that. I have here an article from the Los Angeles Times, dated March 31st, 1962. United States to propose end of national armies. United Nations force would keep global peace. That's just a headline. On the later show, I'm going to read the whole article. I don't have time right now. And then we're going to get into the Open Skies Treaty, also in the later show. Maybe I do have time to read this newspaper article. United States to propose end of national armies. United Nations force would keep global peace. March 31st, 1962. Los Angeles Times. One of the world's greatest newspapers. Geneva, UPI. The United States will submit to the Geneva Disarmament Conference a plan calling for elimination of national armies within 9 years and a replacement by a United Nations force, reliable sources said Friday. The American plan is to be submitted to the 17-nation group to counter a Soviet draft treaty for general and complete disarmament within 4 years, introduced when the conference opened here 2 weeks ago. You see how they work together, ladies and gentlemen? And you thought the Cold War was real? Not on your life. The American plan is to be submitted to the 17-nation group to counter a Soviet draft treaty for general and complete disarmament within 4 years. Introduced when the conference opened here 2 weeks ago. It was understood Secretary of State Rusk and William C. Foster, Director of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, were meeting in Washington with their advisors to put the finishing touches on the plans. Unique advantage. The West complained that their advisors put the finishing touches on the plan. The West complained that the Russian four-year plan gives the Russians an undue military advantage in the early stages and does not include specific and detailed proposals for international controls to ensure each nation destroys its arms on schedule. The American plan was said to include these precautions as well as a United Nations peace force to maintain international law and order as national defenses are torn down. The Soviet plan omits any mention of a standing peace force. At Friday's session, the Soviet tried to commit the United States to total disarmament within 4 years. But American negotiator Arthur H. Dean told Soviet delegate Valerian Zorin, "You cannot build a house without a blueprint." Zorin suggested the conference start taking up the Russian plan point by point, and when Dean put the brakes on the proposal, Zorin warned that the conference might be heading into another impasse. A specific study was urged. Dean proposed instead that the 17-nation group set up subcommittees to consider such specific problems and how to end nuclear weapons production, how to destroy or reduce nuclear delivery vehicles, including ships, submarines, planes, and rockets, and how to verify such measures. These are not problems of language, but of substance, Dean said. Zorin rejected the subcommittee's suggestion, first made by Rusk, and said these problems cannot be solved separately. If we are going to have general and complete disarmament, they must all be dealt with at the same time and in stages. There's those stages again, folks. Zorin said the Soviet Union is already to discuss any plan put before the conference. A statement interpreted by Western observers as a challenge to the United States to bring forth its own proposals. British Minister of State Joseph Godber, speaking after Dean had rejected the Soviet proposals, said general agreement on certain basic issues must be reached before they can be put into treaty form. As expected, Poland, Bulgaria, and Romania lined up behind the Soviets in demanding point-by-point consideration. Neutral Brazil came out in favor of the American approach. India and the United Arab Republic, the only other speakers, were on the fence. The American and Soviet co-chairmen, Dean and Zorin, met privately in the afternoon to discuss how the conference should proceed. The next session of the conference was set for Monday, when the question of the deadlocked nuclear test ban subcommittee will be considered. Later tonight, folks, on the Hour of the Time, we are going to talk about the Open Skies Treaty. We'll be reading from the United States Department of State dispatch dated March 30th, 1992, beginning on page 257. And we will also be Reading from the United States Department of State Dispatch, March 29, 1993, Volume 4, Number 13. And many of you will be absolutely amazed to know that Soviet bombers and Soviet aircraft, both military and civilian, of both combat, logistics, and passenger-carrying capability, have been and are now overflying the United States on a regular basis. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. You see, folks, things are a lot farther down the road than you ever in your wildest dreams could imagine. Got time for maybe four quick calls here. 602-333-2174 if you'd like to put in your two cents about what you've just heard. 602-333-2174 is the number. Don't forget, on Monday night, we're going to be talking about how you're going to make the modifications to your 375 H&H Magnum with a Mauser action to make the best sniper rifle in the entire world, second only to one, which can no longer be built because we cannot get that action anymore. Good evening, you're on the air. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, I want to ask you, what do you think about the speed reading stuff? Do you think that actually works?
What are you talking about?
Well, you know how they advertise for speed reading? You can read real fast and have a lot of time.
Folks, I don't remember discussing speed reading any time during the course of this program, and I don't know where these people come off the wall from. It's like I threw a tennis ball at the wall, and it just bounced back and hit me right in the eye. 602-333-2174, and I don't want to hear about how you raise beans in Podunk, okay? Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. How you doing tonight?
Good.
I have some information here from Handgun Control Incorporated, secret memorandum, Monday, January 24th, 1994, 4:10 p.m., from Gary Westfall to all, I don't know what, there's a bunch of codes and stuff after it. And here it is. This memo talks about the laws that they want to have for guns, and what is pending for...
Wait a minute. You're breaking up and you're not pronouncing your words. I don't know a thing you said. It talks about what?
Okay. It talks about the gun laws that they want to enforce by the end of 1994.
Uh-huh.
And they have several things listed for that and 34 things listed for the next 5 years. Can I read some of them, please?
Sure.
And all of the clips holding over 6 bullets and all semi-automatics, which can fire more than 6 bullets without reloading, and possession of parts to convert arms into military configuration, ban on all pump shotguns capable of being converted to more than 5 shots without reloading. And there's a bunch more going on there, and including taxes on ammunition, dealers, licenses, and guns, and ban on all realistic replicas or toy guns or non-firearms capable of being rendered realistic. They get really crazy on this.
They really are crazy. Carolyn, would you take a memo, please, to the handgun, what's the name of this thing?
Gun Control Incorporated.
Handgun Control Incorporated. Carolyn, take a memo. To Handgun Control Incorporated. Screw you, signed William Cooper, you ain't getting my gun.
And this fellow patriot, too, Bill. I appreciate your show.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. 602-333-2174. The noive of those creeps. They ain't getting my guns. Good evening. You're on the air.
Good evening, Bill. I just wanted to tell all the stupid people out there that this is a collection of an international bankruptcy, and they're going to seize everything you own, including your soul. Thanks.
Well, they can't get my soul. It belongs to somebody else, but... they can get all your material possessions. In the totalitarian New World Order, you will not be allowed to own private property. They don't hide that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
I've been listening to your program for the last several days.
Good.
It's outstanding. It's about time somebody spoke up. Unfortunately, you're not getting the national coverage that the media kiss asses get, but you're getting the select people. I want America to wake up. I've had the unfortunate experience of having to deal with these people who are out to steal our property, our firearms, and our lives.
That's correct. That's exactly what they're out to do. And we thank you for your call. Got about time for one more, folks. 602-333-2174. If you want to put in your 2 cents worth. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bill. Related to your topic last night on that H.R. 6, that House bill in the school, talked to Congressman Hancock's office today. And the aide that answered said they're getting call after call on that, so maybe you got to some folks.
Good. I hope we got to some folks. If you haven't yet made your calls, start making calls and call every day. In fact, call twice a day. Write twice a day. Telegram twice a day. And don't stop.
And I had a conversation with Mel in person here earlier this week where he told me, pertaining to the Federal Reserve, that in fact it was not an entity of the United States government.
That's correct.
And I asked him, I said, well, can't we at least audit them and find out what they're doing? He said, well, yeah, they need to. We've had bills up, but he said, quite frankly, most of the congressmen and senators are scared of them. He said they've grown too big and too powerful to control. He said, in fact, they're out of control.
That's right. Not only that, but they kill people.
Right.
That's okay. People have to stop being afraid of being killed. We all band together. Let's get them.
Right. Listen, I'll let someone else get in there, but I thought I'd throw that in.
Okay. Well, it's too late. Good night.
Okay.
Well, folks, that does it for another hour of the time. Don't forget to listen tonight at 9 Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, at midnight Eastern Standard Time for the Hour of the Time. Good night, and God bless you all.